On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to More and Monday on the Horn. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Yeah, it's Tuesday. Oops. Well, despite the fact that it is Tuesday, I fear that we do have ourselves a passel, if you will, of Morans with whom to deal this evening. But I tell you what, if you're ever going to give up a Moran Monday, last night was the perfect reason why. As our buddy John wrote in, having listened to Dr. Bill and his the history chat last night, John simply wrote back and said, well, wait a minute, why paraphrase? Let me just scroll down there and get it. Because it really captured the whole spirit of the thing. Where are you, John? There you are. Subject line, just damn. I wish everyone in the country could hear Dr. Bill's discussion of Jefferson, the noble savage, and manifest destiny. This is serious historical red meat here. And that rolled into the email before I left the campus of the Irma Bird Center. And so I was able to share that with Dr. Bill before we took off. Just tickled him pink. Just tickled him pink because if at some point in your educational history you ever developed a certain animus against history because someone had ruined it for you, kind of the way people ruined mathematics for me. Just making it dry, dusty, dull, and unbearable. Well, if somebody ever did that with history for you, then you owe it to yourself to go over to the Horns Ustream channel, American History 7R, and just take 2 hours to watch and or listen to Dr. Bill O'Brien and Professor Keith Lilly bring American history to absolute magnificent life. Because that's what happened last night. It was nothing short of amazing. I checked over at White Rose Society. The archive of last night's audio is also up, so hopefully folks will be getting to hear that. This was 2 hours of master's level historic instruction in American history. But it was impossible not to just catch the absolutely infectious enthusiasm for the topic that Dr. Bill brings to it. I'm sad to say that's our last American History chat until the Academy this summer. Now, the American History Academy this summer, we will be bringing in its entirety, both video and audio, with some amazing guest lecturers, and it will take up 2 weeks. 2 weeks that Ferg and I, Horn intern, junior grade Ferg, Ferg and I will be on the campus of Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. 2 weeks in which the topic of American history will come every bit as much to life as it did last night. And as I keep trying to emphasize, there's a reason for doing this. In what would seem to be almost supernatural timing, I ran across this story at Alternet even as we were getting ready to go and present Dr. Bill's History Chat. It's about a guy named David Barton. Listen to this. Newt Gingrich promises to seek his advice and counsel for the 2012 presidential campaign. Mike Huckabee calls him America's greatest historian, says he should be writing the curriculum for American students, and in fact suggested that all Americans should be forced at gunpoint to listen to his broadcasts. Michelle Bachmann calls him a treasure for our nation and invited him to teach one of her teabag and caucus classes on the Constitution for members of Congress. State legislators from around the country invite him to share his wisdom with them. Glenn Beck calls him the most important man in America. Who is he? Well, as this article, originally taken from People for the American Way, notes, the guy is David Barton, a Republican Party activist and a fast-talking, self-promoting, self-taught, self-proclaimed historian who is deliberately miseducating millions of Americans about U.S. history and the Constitution. Whoa. See, last night there was no deliberate miseducation. Last night it was nothing but wall-to-wall, brilliant historical discourse. Because that's what history kind of has to be, taken outside of the fact that any history is going to be colored by the point of view of the person relating the history. That's unavoidable. But the best historians try to make sure that those shadings, those colorations, don't take away from the overall the pursuit of the knowledge. The same may not be said of David Barton. It's one thing to bring a particular political bent or a social perspective to the study of history. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, by the way. It is another entirely just to make stuff up. And that is what David Barton and some of these other disgusting, mendacious, duplicitous, oh, stop with the pretty words, Bob, filthy liars do. As the article continues, David Barton has been profitably peddling a distorted Christianization version of American history to conservative religious audiences for the past two decades. His books and videos denouncing church-state separation have been repeatedly debunked by respected historians, but that hasn't kept Barton from becoming a folk hero for many in the religious right, otherwise known as the right-wing religion industry. His eagerness to help elect Republicans has won him gratitude and support from national as well as state and local GOP leaders. Former Senator Sam Brownback, now the governor of Kansas, has said that Barton's research provides the philosophical underpinning for a lot of the Republican effort in the country today, bringing God back into the public square. In 2005, Time magazine named him one of the most influential evangelical Christians in 2005. Among other things, Barton argues that the nation's founding documents were essentially cribbed from colonial-era sermons. I think we covered some of that a few months back. there is no end to what this huckster is willing to hustle. And you know what? The only defense against it is the sort of thing that we had here on the horn last night. David in Tennessee noting that Barton freak is a mainstay on TBN, that's Trinity Broadcasting Network, Paul and Jan Crouch. You know, Jan Crouch, the woman who makes the late Tammy Faye Baker look sedate and demure by comparison. Usually hosted by that lawyer nutter Jay Sekulow, he holds forth on the Christian underpinnings of Merca. As David in Tennessee notes, he lies and 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 lies. Yeah. And as I said, the only defense against it is to actually know the history so that you can know when you are being lied to. Because the way this guy succeeds is by having... Well, he prays... He doesn't prey on people's innocence. He doesn't prey on people's goodwill. He preys on their ignorance. He preys on the fact that somewhere back in the dim and foggy mists of time, a whole lot of people in this country got turned off to real history because they didn't have a Dr. Bill O'Brien or a Professor Keith Lilly standing at the front of the room getting them all absolutely lit up about the world, the world that came before theirs. It was in at Connect 2011 Pastors Conference where David Barton said Christians need to control the culture and media so that, quote, guys that have a secular viewpoint, pay attention, cannot survive. He went on and said, if the press lacks moral discrimination, it's because we haven't been pushing our people to chop that kind of news off. You know, facts. Well, we've got lots of stuff to go into tonight, without a doubt. I'm sure you know that at this point in time, over in Kandahar, Afghanistan, we have been made to look... I'm not sure if what they did was more Steve McQueen, The Great Escape, or Sergeant Schultz was running the prison en masse. What does I Know Nothing sound like in Pashtun? God, that was embarrassing, though, wasn't it? They dug a 1,280-foot tunnel that had air conditioning! And, of course, they had to have a lot of help from the inside. But you've read everything there probably is to read about that. There's not much more to say about it, unless perhaps it's the fact that Afghanistan is a place where tribal loyalties trump any idea of nationhood. Afghanistan has virtually no idea of nationhood. As such, you know, if your uncle comes to you and says, you know, your cousins are rotting away in the prison in Kandahar, and you owe it to them to get him out, well, you got to live with him because he's part of your tribe, and it's not like you can just move off to Dubuque because you're going to stay right there, right where you were born, right where you were raised, and right where you're going to die. And if you cooperate and get along with the elders of your tribe, you know what? The where you die part might not happen for a while. get all misty-eyed and start talking about the rise of the nation state, however, and that death can be the sort of prorated forward, if you will. Of course, Afghanistan's another one of those places where we're doing what we're doing because the people who got all that, got that ball rolling, had no functioning appreciation for the meaning of history. Hence, back to Monday night, right? Yeah. Earlier today on my Facebook page, our buddy Horst, who also maintains a YouTube page at Horzac, his YouTube name is Horzac, H-O-R-Z-A-C, and Horst makes clips of various and sundry rants and ravings here on this program and posts them at YouTube so that they can be passed around. If you're not signed up as a to follow Horzac's page on YouTube, you really should be, because those are handy little clips to be able to pass around. But he sent me what he called an oldie but a goodie, an editorial cartoon today. And it was really tiny on my screen, but then I clicked on it and it got bigger, and I knew what it was before it even it came to full resolution. It's that editorial cartoon, it's in color, of a guy standing at a bus stop reading a newspaper. And the headline on the newspaper says, "One out of five Americans believes Obama is a Muslim." And there's a normal guy and a normal woman and another normal guy. And then there's this little guy with a beanie with a propeller on the top, who looks like he has an IQ of something around freezing, and he's eating a bag. He's eating something, snacking out of a bag labeled paint chips. I read that, and I saw that, and started. It was like seeing it for the first time. I laughed. The tears were rolling down my face, because it is so very funny, and then the tears and the laughter stop, and the tears of grief come, and you realize it's all so true. Paint chips. 26% of Republicans favor Donald Trump. Paint chips. That's where all those statistics always come in, about that 26 to 30% number. Just enough to screw up the rest of the country, but not enough to be a majority. 26% people believe. What was it? 26-27% of people in New Jersey thought they were pretty darn sure that Barack Obama was the Antichrist. Remember that story? Yeah, me too. Well, guess what? It's the snacks on paint chips crowd that David Barton is aimed at. Remember last week when our dear friend Jude sent in that link to, what was it called, Reclaim Seven Mountains, in which the right-wing religion industry made plain that it intends to completely control and dominate and every facet of American culture, such that it is, so that normal people, you and I, have no choice but to knuckle under and submit? Yeah. Well, that's the people, again, that's the people that David Barton is talking to. As this article from People for the American Way notes, Barton's work is not just an academic exercise. It's meant to have a political impact. For Barton, documenting the divine origins of his interpretations of the Constitution gives him and his political allies a potent weapon, they write. He promotes a false reality in which anyone who opposes any element of his political agenda stands in opposition both to the Founding Fathers and to God! Jeebus. He is a dominionist, you see. if not a Christian Reconstructionist. He has made plain that every aspect of American society, from government, the judiciary, the economy, the family, entertainment, information, all of it should be governed according to the Bible. And thus, his opponents, even if they are, they still call themselves Christians, they're not, in Barton's world, they're not just wrong, they're un-American, they're anti-religious, and they're probably liberals. And we're not, this is the guy who heads up an organization called Wall Builders. Remember that word, wall builders. Wall builders makes up quotes. If you were listening last night to what Dr. Bill had to say, he was talking toward the end of the program about this business of the right-wing attempt to transform George Washington into an evangelical right-wing fundamentalist. Well, that's the kind of thing that comes out of wall builders. They make up quotes out of whole cloth. Dr. Bill was talking about a quote of from George Washington, the only problem with which is the fact that George Washington never said it. Therefore, it's not a quote. But they did the same thing this wall builders outfit did with Abraham Lincoln. Truth or falsity, fact versus non-fact, none of it matters to David Barton. It was in March when Barton accused President Obama of, quote, being engaged in a pattern of willfully, deliberately repudiating America's Christian heritage. You can almost feel them beginning to vibrate, can't you? I mean, this is books, videos, lectures. By the way, guess where his academic credentials come from? Anybody? Trying to keep it together here. He's got a Bachelor of Arts degree from Oral Roberts University. He's got an honorary doctorate of letters from, you listening, Cossack? Pensacola Christian College. Yeah. And from there, he went on to found Wall Builders. Barton says the Christian America, going back to the text again, the Christian America he wants to create is not a theocracy, but it would clearly be an America in which religious minorities would have to settle for schools and other governmental institutions promoting Christianity right down their throats. This is what he said to Focus on the Family. Remember Focus on the Family, founded and driven to prominence by James Dobson, who said that children need to be beaten until they cry real tears, who said the way that you prevent a little boy from turning into a homo is for a grown naked man to shower with him and show him what a real masculine penis looks like. Yeah, that Focus on the Family. And by the way, I know now I will never buy anything from Jockey ever again. I saw the little Timmy Jebo commercial. Yeah, Haynes has Michael Jordan, so Jockey's going for the evangelical vote with little Timmy Jebo. Now, Barton told Focus on the Family, the Bible clearly teaches that the way people view their own history affects the way they behave. God wants us to know our history and learn its lessons. At Wall Builders, at Wall Builders, At Wall Builders, we present American history, and we do so with a providential perspective. In other words, their God is a God who lies about things that are actually factual, with a providential perspective. In short, history not only shows God's workings and plans, but it also demonstrates the effectiveness of biblical principles when applied to church, education, government, economics, family, entertainment, military, or any other aspect of life. Yeah, yeah, because biblical principles applied to, you mean biblical principles like, pi being equal to 3? Yeah, somebody show me a sports arena constructed on the biblical principle that pi equals 3, as it is said to do in the Book of Kings. Hint, you can't, because the building would not stand up. He wants an America based on biblical principles, such as it says in Genesis, that God created two lights to rule the sky, the sun to rule the day, and the moon to rule the night. You know, back in 2009, that got Bill Nye the Science Guy booed in Waco, Texas, when he pointed out that the moon was not a light like it done says in Genesis. That is merely a reflector of the sun's light. They booed him in Waco, Texas. Do you recall? Of course you do. Yeah. Biblical principles to run the country. And you know what? I'm not kidding. There's no room for you in this. You will either bow the knee of fealty or get the sword run through you. Now, there was talk there about divine providence driving things, right? It was God's will, for instance, that the first peoples on this continent be practically driven into extinction. This paragraph from the article, which ties directly to what Jude sent in last week, Barton, like other religious right leaders, has been increasingly embracing Seven Mountains Dominionism, which teaches that certain kinds of Christians are meant by God to dominate every sphere of society. And on their webpage, they define providence, divine providence. Providence is defined as the preservation, government, guidance, and direction which God exercises over all creation, including the civil affairs of men and women. The scriptures contain a theology of the family, the church, and the state. Principles in God's written word that relate to civil government, politics, economics, and education are timeless, even that pi equals 3 part, and universally useful, even, again, that pi equals 3 part, for the benefit of any culture on earth today. This article is quite long. It's a long read, and I encourage you. I found it at alternet.org. Meet the religious right charlatan who teaches Tea Party America the total pretend history they want to hear. This thing, I haven't even gotten to the part of this article that would raise up the little hairs on the back of your neck. I really, really haven't. You really need to go and read this thing. And secondarily, or perhaps primarily, in order to be fully well situated, I don't like to say well armed, it implies shooting and stuff, but so that you can have your loins all girded up with knowledge, you know, it sounds somewhere in Proverbs or something, to study to show thyself approved. I highly recommend, A, making plans to view the entirety of the American History Academy coming this summer on the Horn, and two, as soon as this show is over, run right over and either download as a podcast last night's file, or go to ustream.tv and just look for American History Seminar. I think we misspelled that, but anyway, look for American History Seminar and view last night's discussion. If you don't come away with just absolutely jacked up to know more, well, I don't know what more can be done to make history real. It is half past the hour, and we will go to the conversation radio portion of the program here very, very presently. You know the number, of course, 877-443-2366. That's toll-free, of course. 877, the numeral 4, head-on, H-E-A-D-O-N. If you want to just dial direct, it rings in the same place, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And before we take our little bottom of the hour break, I do want to, at least with a nod toward what we missed last night, I got to bring out at least one more in. Robert A. Watson, come on down. Robert A. Watson, Repiglican from Rhode Island. He is the House Minority Leader. Not too awfully long back, he was criticizing the Rhode Island legislature's agenda, I suppose you would say. He wanted it. He wanted more Repiglican things to be getting done. He didn't like the fact that there was some cannabis decriminalization stuff on the docket, on the agenda. In fact, he was so incensed by it that he said, "Well, I suppose if you're a gay man from Guatemala who gambles and smokes pot, you probably think that we're onto some good ideas here." Whew. Of course, he's a family values Repiglican. And being a family values Repiglican, well, he keeps his family values close to home in Rhode Island and apparently doesn't take them with him when he goes over to East Haven, Connecticut. It was in East Haven, Connecticut, you see, where he was stopped at a police sobriety checkpoint. Let's just go to the news report. A Rhode Island state lawmaker who once criticized the state legislature by invoking the image of pot-smoking gay immigrants, denies a DUI charge he received after being arrested for alleged marijuana possession, the Providence Journal reports. House Minority Leader Robert Watson was arrested Friday at a police checkpoint here in East Haven, Connecticut. Wow. That's good. The Journal says the police report alleged that the Repiglican lawmaker's eyes were extremely glassy and bloodshot, and that he smelled of alcoholic beverages, as well as the distinct odor of marijuana, that there were, the cannabis paraphernalia in the car, and trace amounts of the demon weed itself. Yes. He was released on $500 bond. He has a court date May 11th. He denies he was driving under the influence. Said he was in Connecticut to help a friend move and was driving home from dinner when he was stopped. No, brownies for dessert. Trace evidence of marijuana was discovered and I was charged with operating under the influence, a charge I vehemently deny. Hypocrisy, thy name is Repiglican. So there's our first belated Moran Monday nominee. I do believe we have more. We'll be back with your calls, should you see fit to make them. Otherwise, it'll be more filibobstering. Right after a little break. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is, in fact, well, this is the horn. Here.
Legalize it, yeah, yeah, and I will advertise it. Some call it time to kill. Some call it. Of instrument too. Legalize it, yeah, yeah, that's the best thing you can do.
Okay, that's all the singing for tonight. It's about 20 minutes before the hour. This is the horn. It is Tuesday. I'm Bob Kincaid. I already told you how to reach the program if you feel so inclined to do so. The immortal Peter Tosh and Legalize It. How can you not play that? Well, I almost went with Got Stoned and I Missed It. There were a couple of other possibilities. The new Riders of the Purple Sages, Panama Red, was a possible bumper. But in the end, you can't go wrong with Peter Tosh. You just can't. Let's see what's going on here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, what's going on? I would have personally went with Tommy Chong up in smoke.
Well, there's that too. See, I mean, there are so many different directions you can go. What's happening, Spike?
Not much. Just trying to survive life in the Lou Barletta country. One day.
Yeah, he reared up his ugly little head recently, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, actually, I want to kind of deflate the bubble a little that's being generated by many sites and MSNBC, making it seem like there was mobs of people yelling at him. He only had two people calling him out. The entire rest of that room of the town hall were all geritol nitwits who were all supporters. So,
is that a new demographic, geritol nitwits?
Well, that's the target demographic for the GOP. That's why they're out there saying, hey, we're screwing the younger people. We're taking care of you genital nitwits that keep voting for us. Just pay no mind that we're also screwing you. Certainly, I'm sure that's how honestly the conservatives in this country truly feel behind the scenes about them, those geritol nitwits that support us. I know if I was one of them, that's what I would think of their base. Because if you're going to vote for candidates like that, you're a nitwit. So, but it was only two people, one an older woman who really, I never got a good look at her from either video posted by the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, who I think the older woman was actually the, quote, plant. And then the guy that was eventually escorted out by the local Barney Fife Police Department, who's from my county, his wife is a committee person in my county, although she's not a very involved committee person. Basically, we only see her the meeting before the election, although he's a he's almost like a loose cannon. He just shows up to public things, and he'll let candidates, right-wingers, have it. And so that's why, since he lives near the border with the county where Lou Barletta was, he took the short drive over to once again get on Barletta. And this is twice now Barletta's had town halls, and that guy has got on him off the bat. But it wasn't as spectacular as the Jerry Ryan one. The Jerry Ryan one, I think, is the better one for everyone to focus on, where the entire room turns on Mr. I forced my ex-wife to go to a sex club against her wishes. You know, that Jerry Ryan.
Engage.
I wish people would bring that one up again. You know, he had a.
Well, there's a fresh one out there, Spike. Just cracking today. A curiously named Repiglican from Florida, Daniel Webster. Now, you want to hear some ugly?
All right.
Okay, so he did a town hall down in Florida. Geritol generation. Okay, but they weren't acting that way. They were a little bit hot. And this isn't any two people or plants or anything. Just check this out for a second. This is rich, okay? You ready?
All right.
Here we go.
All right.
About one senior citizen is harmed by this budget.
What?
You're a liar!
No, damn liar!
Everyone understands
you're a liar! What about the veterans?
Now, how do you expect me to earn from now to 9 years when I don't have any Medicare, I have no insurance then because I lose my insurance. How do you think and I have pre-existing problems, what insurance company is going to insure me? You tell me.
None.
He wants to
repeal
the pre-existing
insurance.
And it only gets better from there, Spike.
Yeah, that was a little hard to hear him through the phone.
Well, yeah, no, his audio is crappy because he wasn't anywhere near the video camera. All he says at the front end is, now this budget isn't going to hurt any senior citizens. Exactly what you said a minute ago about how, you know, the divide and conquer strategy. You guys are going to be fine. Let's screw those young people.
Yeah, well, to quote a great, one of my favorite political quotes of all time from Fear and Loathing in a Campaign Trail 72, the real problem in any democracy is that crowd pleasers are generally brainless swine who go out on the stage and whoop their supporters up into an orgastic frenzy and then go back to the office and sell every one of the poor bastards down the tube for a nickel apiece. And I think that is the perfect quote when talking about the Republicans and healthcare, how they loaded up buses in the summer of 2009 that sent a lot of these same people out screaming against the Democrats or, you know, the quote-unquote handful of moderates out there, what have you, that might have been in support of the health care bill and shouting them down. The younger, although he was older too, but the younger man that got in the face of a Arlen Specter who was still recovering from cancer treatment, maybe the most classic of all, bullying a sick man, a sick elderly man. And, you know, they didn't think that they might be a little side effect that once all these people who they were telling to support us, not the Democrats and Obama, because they're going to take your Medicare away. They're going to take that away from you. And so these people complied, and then they come out when they get elected, and the first thing they say is, oh, yeah, by the way, we're going to get rid of Medicare.
Yeah, silly you. You believed us.
Yes.
Right.
Thanks for your vote. And also, they took a lot of these posts by using the strategy of vote-out incumbents. Well, guess what? With Congress being 2 years, you know how many of these jokers are going to be voted out in 2012? Because the Democrats used it to unseat the Republicans a few years ago, vote out the incumbents. Then the Republicans just piggybacked that strategy this last election. I can't tell you how many people said that to me here. Well, we're voting for Barlett, not because we really like him, but it's just time for change. So guess what? The ace card is gone for them the next election, because now they're going to be the incumbents. And since the two parties have worked very great on this strategy of vote out incumbents, the Republicans will be gone in 2012 for the most part. You know, the only place where maybe that's a
but there's a problem that lurks. There's a problem that lurks underneath that spike, and that is this. And I think it was Chris.
Substance.
Well, it's not just that. I think it was Chris Hedges who pointed this out and said that an uninformed, angry electorate who knows that it's getting screwed every time it turns around finds itself in a position of being able to do little more than adopt a vote-the-bums-out attitude every 2 years. And the only thing that ensures is that nothing will ever get done.
That's very true. Because as soon as one group gets in and tries to do something, then the other will come in and try to overturn everything, which is...
I mean, did you hear John Boehner trying to be all, like, frustrated and hip from yesterday? He was at some factory in God knows where, and he was giving Obama hell, and he said, "Oh, come on, man!"
I try to avoid any speeches or conversations involving talking hard-ons, so not hear what the Cheeto.
Okay, there's tonight's first toaster.
I don't know where the Cheeto Boehner was saying at that point. Yeah, well, they had a guy running their party for what, 2 years, trying to be hip too. The man that needs the waiter on the Muppet Show and or Sesame Street.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No reason to say his name, because you know he was just a token for them to say, "See, we're not racist."
No, and especially now that they've got Rents Priebus as the RNC. You know, I laugh every time I see that guy's name.
That's such a Germany name. The Third Reich would even tone it down a little.
You know, I don't know. I mean, every time I see the name of the new RNC chairman, Spike, I think, you know, if you experience Rents Priebus for more than 4 hours, please contact your physician. Or, you know, wash frequently and you will not have to tolerate the heartbreak that is Rents Priebus.
Well, they certainly like any phallic references they can get, hence why they have Boehner, they have Rents Priebus. Anything phallic, the Republicans are all over, so to speak. But before I go, I have to bring this up, because this is another local story. I have to make this one. I'd love to turn it into a national story to put some shame on WNEP in Scranton. The ABC affiliate owned by the New York Times Corporation out of Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, ran a story tonight. Some POS housewife with nothing better to do than sitting on her incredibly large behind surfing the web uncovered that a English teacher there has a pen name that she writes romance novels under. So now her and some other fat cow values housewife in central Pennsylvania are trying to smear her. And the best part of all is if you actually go to WNEP.com and see the story, the reporter basically clearly admits, I didn't do anything. I'm just repeating what these two nitwits have handed me because they researched it on the Internet. And, you know, anything you read on the Internet must be true. Or here on a radio show, as many Republicans will believe. So I'll just also like to add real quick, my penis is 2 feet long. So now since it was said on a radio show, it's fact for the right wing in this country. But getting back on target, this station where Bill O'Reilly got his start in broadcasting in the 70s,
Scranton,
ran this story so that essentially they can make it a big news story and get the school district who, you know, doesn't want to comment, I guess, to start putting pressure to fire this woman. And they even had some nitwit saying she has to choose between either being a teacher or an author. Now, here's a sad news flash for you nitwitted Bible thumpers out there. You can't make a living doing either one exclusively, especially in Pennsylvania, thanks to our fat idiot governor, Tom Corbett, not to be confused with the one in the next state over in Trenton. So first of all, she needs to make some extra cash to pay her bills so she doesn't have to collect welfare or get food stamps, you know, because you know how much these valued Christians believe in the teachings of Jesus until it actually comes to actually doing what he spoke about, you know, helping others that can't help themselves, things like that.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's a public school, which is interesting. They're against government getting involved in people's lives, but yet now they want government to intervene and fire someone. Or am I alone in noticing that hypocritical?
No, right.
So I want everyone listening.
Kind of hard to avoid, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd love everyone out there to go to WNEP.com. It's not hard to find the story. Go to the comments section and spam the bejesus out of them with pro-free speech talking points and the fact that she didn't do anything illegal. It's not like she was a Catholic school. This was Catholic school, and she was a priest molesting the children. You know, another place where there's lots of values to be taught, the Catholic Church. She, on her private time and her other job, was writing a book for adults about adults. There's no reason this woman...
I mean, that's all there is, right? The woman has a nom de plume. You have to say it that way. Plume. The woman has a nom de plume, and she writes romance novels. I assume we're talking about your standard bodice ripper fare. I mean...
Yeah, I'm sure there's some scene, you know, steamy descriptions in the books. Big deal. She has every legal right.
But you know what? Actually, what's scary is, depending on where one is, there are a lot of... And there are teachers in the audience who can opine on this as well. I think there are still teacher contracts in this country that have so-called morals clauses in them.
Morality clauses, yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of places that have morality clauses. They just seem to cherry-pick one and if they use them. You know, these teachers that also support... You know, why not fire teachers who supported, let's say, Republican teachers in my county who supported Mark Pazohanich to be judge a few years ago, who turned out to be a child molester? Let's fire them for their vote. I mean, where does it end when you go after people for what they do in their private time? Let's just continue to be extreme. I mean, then again, I'm living in a state where people in the central part of the state think by being in violation of our immigration policy that capital punishment is acceptable. That murdering someone for being an illegal immigrant, well, he had it coming because he was an illegal immigrant, which is, you know, and then, of course, when I tried to get an op-ed on WNEP's little talkback line saying, you know, how about I rape someone if they go through a stop sign? I mean, that's the same justice. They said, well, that's too extreme to say something like that. Really? But it's not too extreme to say you can kill someone for being an illegal immigrant? Let WNEP have it, because they do nothing but really try their hardest to spew the most extreme right-wing talking points. Anytime there's a labor dispute, they do nothing but try to air anti-union...
And yet they're owned by the New York Times, right? I mean, we're constantly told by the savage wiener and the rest of the filthy cabal that liberals, and yet they own a right wing yakety yak news station in Scranton.
Right, and keep in mind, New York Times were the people who gave us Curveball and his lies to lead us into Iraq.
Oh, sure, and stenographer Judy Miller.
Hey, and what's his name? Who's just sat at home and made up stories and got paid for them? I can't even think of his name off the top of my head. I referenced him like a week or two ago, too. There you go. Here's supposedly the New York Times is the bastion of the best style, the greatest editors, the best fact-checking. I had a guy for a couple of years sitting around his apartment writing stories, making things up.
Don't forget the Cheetos.
Fact checking. Yeah, I mean, come on now. I wish I could just sit around and make stories up. I can't do that cover in IndyCar racing, yet someone could do that cover in Real News. Please, you know.
And got well paid for it? Don't forget that well paid part.
Yeah, trust me, I'm not getting well paid at all. I'm losing money in my venture. going down to St. Pete cost me a lot of money just in gas.
Oh, no kidding. But you do, time your trip, if I understand correctly, to coincide with the breakfast menu at Hardee's.
Somewhat, yeah, I did make sure on the way home. I made a stop at Hardee's and actually picked up stuff to bring home because just in south of Harrisburg is as far north as they go. So that's fast food we can't find around these parts and. It's more country fast food, which is a little bit less bland than the stuff we have around here. So needless to say...
Well, you know, Hardee's is certainly better than Burger King or McDonald's. I mean, it's not a hell of a lot of a recommendation, but you're absolutely right. Oh, by the way, News Ninja Susan wanting to know, if you know, what is the romance writer's nom de plume?
Her real name and pen name both had Judy as the first name. The last name, I'm looking this up right now, is Judy Mays is her pen name, like Willie Mays.
M-A-Y-S.
Y-S. M-A-Y-S, yes.
Okay.
That's the romance author that WNAP is trying their hardest to do a little book.
But, you know, I remember a few years back, because these little fundamentalists, left to their own devices, their own lives are so pitiful and small and bereft of any sort of content or meaning that, you know, this is the only thing. They get themselves whipped into a frenzy over other people's lives. And I remember when some of these weirdos here in West Virginia began objecting to the inserts in the color inserts in the Sunday paper that would fit. No, it wasn't the Sunday paper. They were objecting to the, wait for it, the Avon catalog. There's pictures of women in their underwear in there, and that's dirty.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, WNAP is owned by the Tribune Company. That's L.A. Times and Chicago Times, not the New York Times. So says Marty.
No, they were New York Times for the longest time. I have publications from them that say division in the New York Times. Unless they were recently sold, that would be news to me.
Okay, maybe Marty's information's old.
Yeah, they've been New York Times for quite some time, since at least the 90s, part of the New York Times Corporation.
But to go back, the thing is, these freaks, these repressed freaks, get hung up over the human body. They get hung up. I mean. Oh God! Can you imagine? I mean, no. There was a full on complaint, and there's meetings at the Kanawha County Board of Education because some of the teachers was a supplementing their income by selling the Avon, and they wanted to make sure that the dirty parts of the Avon catalog wasn't there for our little cheering to be corruptedated by.
Well. Is there not a group out there right now who's trying to actively rewrite the Bible to remove all the socialist parts?
Yeah, that's the conservative Bible.
That's right, yeah, because the whole, you know, Jesus wanting to take care of the poor, things like that just kind of urinates on their rich parade. And while I mention urination and the rich in the same sentence, might I just add, the whole reason this malarkey about this thing in England, and that's as far as I'll even say it, is going on is because the media wants Americans to continue to worship the wealthy, continue to idolize the wealthy, continue to do nothing but fawn over the wealthy. This way is our owners, the wealthy, who rule over us, as George Carlin once prolifically talked about, will be able to keep control over us. Because once we lose interest in what wealthy people are doing, our owners are going to lose their power, and they know this. So that's why they keep forcing.
Yeah, and if we're watching them, we're not paying attention to our own lives lived in quiet desperation, right?
Precisely, yes. Stay entertained.
I mean,
keep consuming. Don't pay attention to reality.
Well, I am totally guilty of watching that execrable thing on MSNBC in the morning because there's nothing else. And it was so pathetic this morning that they had a puff piece. I mean, I think I tweeted something like Willie Geist redefines vacuous because he had this puff piece that. Compared that thing in England with a sports lineup. And some man on the street interviews saying, do you know who's getting married this week? And I just thought, well, they moved the whole program to England this week.
Hashtag under lame.
Oh.
And journalism fail. Those would be the two Twitter.
I don't know. I'm you know, I like my fancy $10 words. Hashtag vacuous.
Well, you know what? I there's a good chance I'll be up at that time in the morning, but I'll be on the internet watching baseball live from Japan instead of that because at least there's some good entertainment value from Japanese. There's actually some
damn good ball
in Japanese baseball. Yes, you see some great games if you're willing to sit up in the middle of the night and watch the internet. You can see some great baseball, especially if you live.
Well, I know you follow that. Let me ask you: are you seeing any? Is the Fukushima disaster impacting the Japanese season?
Well, yeah, there's more day games than they used to be. They used to almost never play day games except for on the weekend, kind of like Major League Baseball. Now there's always at least one or two day games, and the upside is those games start around midnight here. So actually, they're not even that late when they come on. But the night game's still coming at like 5 a.m. East Coast time. There's also a couple of games where they're played in venue. There's been some games where the home team is actually the road team because there's two teams that aren't really able to play home games right now. One of them, their stadium got damaged in the earthquake, and they're not far from the nuclear power plant as well, so that's kind of like a double loser for the Hawks. So they're basically a road team this season as of right now. Just some games they get to get the last licks. So it has significantly affected baseball. Although some teams still have great attendance, too. The Hiroshima Carp have pretty good attendance considering they're historically kind of a bad team the last 15, 20 years. Of course, the Giants, the Yomiuri Giants, owned by a major media outlet, have huge turnouts still for their games, as does the Hanshin Tigers. Those two teams are, you know, people like to say the Red Sox Yankees of Japanese baseball. I think that kind of sells them short a little. I'd say more maybe Dodgers Giants, you know, just to be nice for the fact that there's a team named the Giants. Why stick them with the American League? the season started a little later, you know, which Yomiuri Giants didn't want to start late. They just wanted to get rolling early, but many other teams and many of the Japanese public were actually a little annoyed. They wanted to start the season on time, so they pushed the season start date back like about a month because of what happened there. But baseball is huge in Japan. I mean,
oh yes,
it's not just a guy thing. It's a family thing. Everyone loves baseball in Japan, and really,
and the stadium food is awesome.
Yeah, and it's really become a thing to kind of maybe take people's minds off of everything that's gone wrong and really cheer people up and bring their spirits up. Much like baseball has been at times in this country after disaster. So it's being used somewhat as a part of the healing process there, which is pretty cool. And if anyone that follows me out there on Twitter or Facebook, whatever, you'll see my links when I'm watching games live. But,
oh, what's your Twitter handle again?
Spike Rogan, SPIKEROGAN, is my Twitter account there. You can follow me there. And
I thought you had a second handle.
That's a different account.
Okay.
That's for something different.
Okay, but the baseball links will show up under Spike Rogan.
Yeah, anything sports related pops up under Spike Rogan. So.
Well, cool. Cool.
That's all I have.
Well, it's good to hear from you, Spike.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to be on. I've been busy dealing with all sorts of things.
Well, Marty's research department has come through again. He says, Spike is partially correct, and I am incorrect. WNEP is now owned by Oak Hills Capital Partners through a holding company called Local TV. WNEP was owned by the New York Times. More later.
All right. Yeah, they. I wouldn't be shocked that they were sold recently, but I for the longest time they were a New York Times one. So, and before I forget, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but in my township here in 2013, the post of constable is up for election. I'm hoping to. It looks like it shouldn't be too hard for me to get the nomination.
Oh, run, Spike, run. Run, Spike, run.
The next Pennsylvania State Constable from this township.
Oh, I'm driving up in double. I'm driving up in double parking just to abuse privilege.
Then I'll be coming and looking for you.
You know, when double parking's outlawed, only outlaws will double park.
Oh, the NRA logic.
Spike, have a good evening, brother.
You too.
All right, later. Bye now. It's our buddy Spike calling from Pennsylvania. Here in a little bit, I'll share a little bit more of this audio. We'll go back to the beginning of it with this freak Daniel Webster in Florida, because that is, Spike mentioned it, and it really is one of the things that is most repugnant and most reprehensible about the way the Republicans are approaching, they've wanted to kill Medicare since it was created, just like they've wanted to kill Social Security since it was created. And that bears remembering, because they have long memories and they never give up on what they plan to do. You know, it was I ran across something fascinating a few days ago that never quite made it to the show, and maybe we would have done it last night since it was more in Monday, but we were otherwise engaged, because if ever a moment was made for More and Monday, this had to be it. Just to give you proof of how long the Republicans have been going after Medicare. There's this. This is a clip from Michael Moore's Sicko, and it contains a voice you may recognize. Just check this out.
Yes, medicine for everyone. The AMA didn't want that. And to drive the point home further, they held thousands of coffee clutches all over the country, where they invited their neighbors to come and listen to a record made by a well-known actor on the evils of socialized medicine.
My name is Ronald Reagan. One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. The doctor begins to lose freedoms. It's like telling a lie, and one leads to another. A doctor decides he wants to practice in one town, and the government has to say to him, you can't live in that town, they already have enough doctors, you have to go someplace else. All of us can see what happens once you establish the precedent that the government can determine a man's working place and his working methods, and behind it will come other federal programs that will invade every area of freedom as we have known it in this country, until one day we will awake to find that we have socialism.
Yeah. Jesus. And so this latest manifestation is, as Spike notes, to say, hey, you know what? Let's tell all the people who are almost old enough to collect that we're not going to bother them. We're just going to screw other people. We'll be able to get away with it then. On the other hand, some good news. The Vermont Senate today has passed a bill establishing single-payer health care system for citizens of Vermont. The bill passed 21-9. The bill has now passed both the House of Representatives and the Senate in Vermont, otherwise known as Frozen Civilization. It'll have to go to Conference Committee for Reconciliation purposes, and then it will go to the desk of Governor Peter Shumlin, a Democrat, who strongly supports the bill. He has, in fact, said that with his signature, Vermont will become the first state where, quote, Health care will be a right and not a privilege. That, by God, is inspiring. So we'll take a little break. The Green News Report is on the way from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And then we'll come back to your calls. Light them up. Open lines, well, all but one line open. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel. 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
And when I see the sign that points one way, the lot we used to pass by every day.
Preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, April 26, 2011.
And on Saturday, April 26, 1986...
Radiation monitors in Sweden and Finland this morning are showing unusually high readings in places three times normal levels. At the moment, the source of those emissions is a mystery, but speculation has arisen of a nuclear power plant accident inside the Soviet Union.
25 years since the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. Speaking of nuclear disasters, Fukushima, 6 weeks later. Fracking blowout in Pennsylvania, praying for rain in Texas, plus Speaker Boehner opens the door to eliminating oil subsidies.
And his press spokesman then slams it shut. All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So in the old days, you know, when you had a war, to the victor blow and disclose, you go in, you win the war, and you take it.
So we steal an oil?
Excuse me, you're not stealing. Excuse me, you're not stealing anything. You're taking, we're reimbursing ourselves.
You're taking, you're reimbursing, you're taking, you're reimbursing. Adam, Donald Trump, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, the crazy is out in force this week with Donald Trump all over the airwaves and Speaker Boehner, of all people, saying that he would actually consider eliminating massive taxpayer subsidies to the oil industry, to big oil.
I'm sure you saw that the former CEO of Shell Oil came out and said that the company, they don't need these subsidies. So would you be in favor of seeing some of these subsidies that are going to big oil at times of record profits?
It's certainly something that we ought to be looking at.
Of doing away with these subsidies.
We certainly ought to take a look at it. We need to control spending, but we need to have revenues to keep the government moving. And they ought to be paying their fair share.
A Republican, the Speaker of the House, talking about doing away with oil subsidies to big oil? Say it ain't so, Des.
Oh, it ain't so. His spokesperson slammed that door shut less than 12 hours later, saying Speaker Boehner was really talking about raising taxes.
Well, I don't understand.
But neither do I. But apparently what he said was not intended to be a factual statement.
I see. Okay.
Meanwhile, Exxon profit this year is expected to jump 50% over last year due to higher gas prices, again making Exxon the most profitable company in the history of humankind.
And that, of course, counts their free corporate welfare subsidies they get from the government, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Pray for rain. That's the order of the Republican governor of Texas, Rick Perry, who called for 3 days of prayer to ask for rain due to a record drought and historic wildfires that have burned over 1 million square miles of Texas.
That's his solution to drought? Pray for rain?
Yep. Perry is a vocal critic of federal spending and has requested federal funds and assistance to fight the fires.
Heck of a job, Rick Perry.
While Texas is burning, the Midwest, from Arkansas to Missouri, is getting hammered by yet another stretch of extreme storms. Last week, 45 people were killed in tornadoes in North Carolina. Over the weekend, a tornado severely damaged the St. Louis airport. Monday night, tornadoes killed at least 7 in Arkansas, and CNN reports that levees have failed in a town near Kansas City due to flooding, with more rain forecast in the coming days.
Didn't the scientists with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change in 2007 warn everybody we would be seeing these more extreme weather events?
Yes, they did.
Isn't that the same report that the right-wingers have been denying, calling a big hoax for the last 5 years since the 2007 report?
Yes, it is.
Okay, then. I wonder which side I'm going to go with.
Officials are still investigating the cause of a natural gas well blowout in Pennsylvania that dumped drilling mud laced with toxic chemicals into nearby streams last week, almost a year to the day after the blowout on the Deepwater Horizon rig caused the nation's worst offshore oil spill. Chesapeake Energy, the owner of the rig, announced a halt to some of its drilling operations in Pennsylvania until the investigation is completed. Hundreds gathered for memorial services on Tuesday to commemorate the world's worst nuclear accident. April 26th marks 25 years ago to the day that an explosion destroyed a nuclear reactor at Chernobyl in the former Soviet Union in what is now northern Ukraine. Workers at the Chernobyl power station were carrying out a test when a combination of human error and design flaws sparked several explosions, creating a radiation cloud that extended across Europe. Everyone within a 19-mile radius of the plant was evacuated, never to return. The full death toll from the accident remains controversial. The UN International Atomic Energy Agency says only 56 people were killed directly by radiation exposure from the accident, but the full death toll from the aftermath could be as high as 4 to 40,000. Researchers say that most of the cleanup workers were not measured for radiation at the time or tracked later, so there's simply not enough data to definitively link increases in cancer rates to the accident.
And even that number is conservative. Some reports put the death toll as high as hundreds of thousands.
Meanwhile, the nuclear nightmare is unchanged in Japan, and it's still likely months from resolution, 6 weeks after the twin catastrophes of a record earthquake and record tsunami killed over 27,000 people and flooded the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission says the situation remains static but not stable. The Japanese government has now declared it against the law for anyone to enter the 20-kilometer exclusion zone around the plant.
Read about that and the other disasters we didn't have time for today at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. greennewsreport.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We are listener-supported radio and rely on you to stay on your public airwaves. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your disastrous Green News Report.
Are you ready for the great atomic power? Will you rise, meet your savior in the air? Will you shout, will you cry when that fiery swell high? Are you ready for that great atomic power?
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And other bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Past the hour, and we will go straight away to the phones, see what's shaking. By the way, Texas Betsy, anybody else in Texas, did it rain anywhere after the Pray for Rain proclamation? Is anybody working hard on proving to or on demanding that Governor Rick Goodhair Perry give up whatever religious weirdness he... he's not really. That man's no more a Christian than I am. But it never hurts, I guess, to make the knuckle walkers and mouth breathers think you are. Seriously, just like Governor Sonny Perdue did back in Georgia a few years back, the Rick Goodhair Perry, of course, you know, from that demanded that everybody pray for rain. Did it rain? Yeah. Did he do like Sonny Perdue did? Did he call the local TV meteorological center before he prayed to see if it was going to even thunder a little bit? You know, that's almost as cynical as the Pope Mobile. This past weekend was just an orgy of bad television about religion. And there was one feature that somewhere along the way mentioned the Pope Mobile, and they talked about that. It's a Mercedes, what is it? It's like a chopped off Mercedes, chopped back Mercedes SUV with bulletproof glass and everything. And I, you know, the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, I was reminded of him. What's the Pope need with bulletproof glass? Shouldn't his Savior protect him? Yeah, just not a whole lot of faith there in the Savior's bullet-stopping powers. We'd rather have man-made bulletproof glass and explosion-proof undercarriage Mercedes-Benz automobiles. Thank you very much. Call the Weather Center before you pray for rain. Have bulletproof glass when you're the Pope. eh. You know, I guess they've kind of given up on that whole, well, you know, it's okay for others to be martyred, but, well, you know, His Holiness the anti-aircraft gunner, well, he can't be. So back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, my goodness, it's me.
It is you.
Yes, yes. What a week. I guess we should mourn the passing of a singer-songwriter that just...
Phoebe Snow.
Yes.
Yeah, and apparently, if I read Roger Ebert correctly this morning, among other things, she died from... she had other problems, but ultimately she was done in by medical malpractice.
Hmm. But on the other side of things, I mean, I don't think she could have kept going for very much longer because her her disabled daughter that she had cared for over 3 decades had passed away in 2007.
Yeah, bless her heart, that child was not supposed to live more than a couple of years, and because of Phoebe Snow's untiring dedication to her, she lived to the age of 31. That says something, you know.
Yeah, it does say something. It does say something about caring for people, and it makes you think about what the definition of caring for someone is going to be in the next decade or this coming decade, for that matter.
Well, we certainly know what it's going to be like if the Republicans have their way, don't we, David?
I think we can imagine that.
Every day it's proven a little bit more thoroughly that Alan Grayson was not kidding when he said the Republican approach to healthcare is die quickly.
It shouldn't be a hard sell. The Republicans want you to die quicker. Make your choice. That should be the PSA right there. I mean, it's beyond ridiculous what's happening in this country regarding just everything in general. You know, the takeover of the schools, the story that Maddo had on the school in Detroit. The fact that we don't have people who can properly stand up for maybe so intimidated when it comes to our school systems, and just saying we don't need reform. What we need to do is just to focus, concentrate, and keep building until we get a proper infrastructure that we've never had before. That's what we need to do. And we need to keep these vouchers away and all of this bullshit and just realize the quick sell is always going to be the fast decline, as they might say.
Yeah, we're not in for some slow slide. No.
I mean, I'm sure you saw the video. And I guess I was a little bit of the prophet with the stars and moons and robes. I said that there was that reality TV candidate in Wisconsin, Sean Duffy from The Real World, first season, or maybe the second. I think it was the first season. And he was being questioned by the senior citizens in Wisconsin, or rather more appropriately, the town folks, the town citizens, the public. And they had some, I don't know, you probably saw it, right?
No.
You'll want to check it on the Raw story. I'm sure someone's going to send you the video of it. It was really interesting because he brought out the crazy charts.
Oh, you know, fun.
Q in an emoticon face, making the crazy face.
This.
Animated. I mean, that's basically what it was. It was ridiculous. I mean, and they said... He goes, I don't understand. He goes, we know the problem. One of the townspeople rose up and said, I don't understand. We know what the problem is. We just need to raise taxes. And then Sean was stuttering and going, well, if you raise taxes, are we going to get the jobs?
Jesus.
You just, and then after everything he was saying, the townspeople were like, no, no. I mean, it's like they heard the line so many times. And I'm telling you, those charts are crazier, as you might say, than a sprayed
roach.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at him and you're like, this shit doesn't make any sense. And they just kept on calling him out on his bullshit over and over again. And Sean is so out of his element, and he's continuing. Yeah, he needs to go back to, like, a real-world reunion.
Well, speaking of Sean's, it was kind of fun that, bless his little racist heart, Ron Paul called down Sean Hannity on the Sharia law business. It was a beautiful moment.
Did you see the article? I forget where it's from, but they have an article on the Pauls called the, and it's kind of revealing. It's called the Libertarian Kennedys. It's like they're not even close to the Kennedys, but if you want to call them that, I mean, knock yourself out. But I didn't know this, but apparently Ron Paul, which you have to have the bit of a side eye here. Did you know he's selling his house on the internet?
No.
Yeah, he's saying you can buy a piece of liberty. I can't make this stuff up.
No, really, that's the slogan.
Yeah, basically that's the slogan. You can
buy my house at a tidy profit, and you'll walk in and waves of liberty. It's sort of like a libertarian Amityville horror, right? I mean, is that do I get that? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, sort of like that. I mean, and then they went into the positioning of Rand Paul and the fact, and I don't think you'll be happy to hear this one, Bob, but surprise, surprise, another son has ambition for running for office.
Oh, he reproduced twice?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, poor woman.
Robert Paul.
Or was it asexual? Did he just sort of do that? I mean, did he just sort of, I don't know, I just can't imagine,
yeah.
I just sort of imagine Rand Paul and other Pauls just sort of shearing off of him, sort of like, an amoeba or you know, how you can carve you can sort of split a planarium in two and you get four mm-hmm. planaria, you know. Ugh.
Yeah, so
you're rough on the dinner hour, David.
Yeah, I understand it's dinner hour. I like to do a lot of, you know, we have to have our bit of food disgust instead of food porn.
Yeah, see, I missed Bourdain last night. I don't even know what it was about.
Speaking of craziness, did you know, and we have to give it up to Hong Kong, the number one film in Hong Kong that beat out Avatar was a 3D porn. Let's give it up to Hong Kong.
Go Hong Kong.
3D porn. And
I don't even want to think about what 3D porn looks like, okay?
I am not making this up. Guess who is preparing... Oh, Jesus Christ, this 3D shit needs to... I tell you, this 3D shit needs to stop, because... I'm telling you, I'm not making this up.
No, I can feel real existential pain coming from you, David.
I'm not making this up. Guess who is dragged out of the pop culture coffins, as it is, to make a 3D remake?
Oh, no.
I'm not kidding. I read this and I go, you gotta be Caligula.
No.
Crass has decided. You know, I think it's
the movie's so bad that John Gielgud sued to get his name removed from the film.
I know. It's something to make you think about, like the fact of of how much bullshit can you just. Before you just say, you know, this is just bullshit, and just put the microphone down or do the press conference or whatever it is where you're trying to pitch something like that to the public, and then after, but you know what? It's like every single time it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. Especially, I mean, all of these gimmicks, all of this marketing. We are definitely going off the rails to past. Crazy town. But the other thing I wanted to mention, I'm sure you saw, and for those people who aren't watching, you should be, the history of Celtic Britain, episode 3. Did you watch it?
I've got it. I haven't gotten a chance to yet. The weekend was rather busy.
Yeah, I will not spoil it for you. But you should definitely check that out. But the other thing. I was calling about today was I actually watched two documentaries on Israel on the Link TV. One was called Israel Lobby. And holy cow, man, that was an eye-opener for me because they actually showed footage of the AIPAC convention. Holy shit, Bob, it's like Orwell. They had these huge effing screens. I'm not kidding you. Just covering the whole place, like these Jumbotron screens. And they would call out the senators' names. Senator Barack Obama! Just like that. And they had all of these tables. It was insane. You just look at it and you're like, no wonder AIPAC has so much friggin' influence. And then they went into one of the interesting anecdotes. They went into one of the documentaries. Was they were talking about a professor was talking how he was having a light dinner with one of these senators, and he asked the senator, he goes, how can you keep voting for this stuff in Israel? And he goes, is it because of AIPAC? And he says, no, it's not because of AIPAC. And then he asked, is it because of the Jewish vote? He goes, I don't have any Jewish people in my district. And he's like, so what is it? And then he said, you know, it really has to do with the fact that if I do come out against any of this, I'm a one-termer. I'm finished. The Senate will finish me. And he basically just admitted another part of the problem that we have in politics with the influence of this craziness that we've injected in there. And what's really interesting about the documentary, and I'm just gonna promote it for people who haven't seen it yet, but it's really interesting because it really talks about like the early beginnings of AIPAC, Israel in the 1970s, and what started this phenomenon that we have now. And they really do trace it back to like the early 1970s and the start of the marketing, the campaign of how they brought the neocons in, and just the positioning. And it's a really interesting documentary from that perspective. So for people who haven't checked it out, check it out if you can on Link TV. It's called The Israel Lobby. It's about an hour.
Cool. Yeah. Well, speaking of other pop culture phenomena, yeah. Have you seen this story about the quickly tanking Atlas Shrugged?
I keep hearing about. I've read some quotes and reviews on.
Oh,
it.
Oh, this thing's going down like a concrete eagle.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's gotten so bad. The take on the film has gotten so bad that the distributor of the film, Rocky Mountain Pictures, is going to have to actually write checks to subsidize theaters to play it.
Wow. It's going down worse than Willow. I mean, Sweet Jesus is basically about the same type of themes, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know what's amazing is the fact that I had no idea, but this is the other thing that people aren't really making it clear when they do the reviews, probably for good reason, but this is a two-part movie or a three-part or something?
Yeah. I'm hoping parts two and three don't get made.
It's going straight to DVD, I tell you. The same actors. Just a little bit more of a blue screen touch. Looking like something like, you know what's funny?
Yeah,
like,
the little HO scale Lionel high speed trains were really the special effects hit of that film so far I've seen.
Well, you know, the funny thing about, like, when I was a kid, I would watch episodes of MacGyver. And then when MacGyver went over to USA, you couldn't help but notice, like, the budget's different. How are they doing with the stunts? They would speed up
the walls shake. Right.
They would speed up the vehicles. Like you wouldn't actually see a stunt being done. You would just be seeing a vehicle speeding by, and it looks like, you're like, what the hell's wrong with this show now?
No budget.
Yeah, that's what you thought, but you couldn't put your finger on it. Like, Richard Dean Anderson, there's Pete, there's the foundation.
There's the whole budget.
Yeah, we need to found. That's what we need to battle all of these forces that we face. We need MacGyver and the Foundation. And we don't have a Pete, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, the world's been in decline since MacGyver and the A-Team left, and the movie just didn't help.
That's right. The other thing I wanted to mention was I actually sat down and listened to, the Sammy Hagar Chicken Foot album. I wish I didn't listen to that.
Bad experience?
You know, the thing about Sammy Hagar is like all of his, I don't mean to.
Was it like doing the brown acid? I mean, what?
No, if you're a Sammy Hagar fan, I don't mean any disrespect. But I can't take him sincerely because it really does sound like, while I'm listening to this, I should automatically have a Budweiser in my hand and a cooler next to me. And here's the guy saying, I'm serious about my art, man. I'm serious about my art. And I'm like, yeah, I understand that. And he has a song on there called, like, Sexy Thing.
See, you're going to get hate mail from the Sammy Hagar contingent of the Horn family now, David.
I mean, that's the thing about it. And here's the thing about it. I can picture the fans. I have a disdain for Van Halen fans or anything like that. But you know, you picture the fans and you're like, oh my, it's one of those things, it's one of those frontmans that I really never got into because of that fact of that cooler. And I guess it was forced on me, kind of like to the degree of like Steven Tyler or Axl Rose. I mean, you gotta like this guy.
Chinese Democracy, like, oh Jesus.
I mean, you know, and that's, I don't know. I think, what was it that, it's just that I can't take him seriously. He is an interesting interviewer, and his book does sound rather interesting. And I don't know if I can believe, I don't know if you've heard the story that he's going to sell this book on. But he keeps telling this, he keeps retelling this story about how he was abducted by aliens.
Oh, see, I've seen reference to that. Yeah.
And you,
well, how long before he makes an appearance on Alex Jones's show?
You know what? You really have to wonder about that. But the other thing I wanted to mention, and I think it's a good mention, is the fact that people pay attention to Donald Trump, and he's mentioning this birther crap nonstop. I was thinking about who he's associated with. And one of the people that he's tried to poll to say distance himself that he doesn't have any association, but it's pretty much well known at this point, is he has an association with a political trickster, Roger Stone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And apparently, I guess he's I don't know if he's the strategist for the Donald Trump campaign or where he's going, but I wouldn't be surprised if this was a bit of his influence on pushing the birther issue. And we'll just see. I mean, we'll just see how America plays out on this whole. I have my cynicism that America will not be duped.
Well, you know, you mentioned birtherism.
Yeah.
And I got a link earlier today from TPM.
Mm-hmm.
Headlined, RNC Chair Priebus Dismisses Birthers. You know, Rince Priebus of the Exalted Imodium Dragoons and his loyal possum Splat. I'll save you! Rince Priebus. He addressed a breakfast hosted by the Christian Science Monitor.
There's a real legitimate news source.
Yeah, and had the following, not a bad paper, you know, as long as you're not reading them for health advice.
Yeah.
But had the following to say, and I love this because it's so Nixonian. It reminds me of what Woodward and Bernstein, David, termed a non-denial denial. Here is Rince Priebus on birtherism. Trump and the candidates, this is a quote, Trump and the candidates can talk about it all they want, but my position is that the president was born in the United States. I don't think it's an issue that moves voters. It's an issue, in my opinion, that I don't personally get too excited about, because I think the more important question is what's going on in this country in regards to jobs, to debt, and the deficit and spending. Those are the things that people are worried about. People aren't worried about these other issues. But pay attention to the language way back at the beginning.
Yeah.
My position is that the president was born in the United States. Can we spend a minute or two with that, David?
Yes.
Because it's not a position. That sickness that pervades the American socio-political psyche that says that position is all that matters, that there are no longer facts and non-facts. Rens Priebus has a position that the president was born in the United States. That is there's a big difference linguistically, and I would even argue psychologically, between saying Trump and the candidates can talk about it all they want, but the president was born in the United States. There's that, and then there's what Rens Priebus said. Trump and the candidates can talk about it all they want, but my position is that the president was born in the United States. To say that it's a position suggests that it could be proven wrong. It is a non, you know, because the headline on this thing, David, is RNC Chair Priebus dismisses birthers. Well, what this is, to paraphrase Woodward and Bernstein, this is a non-dismissal dismissal. My position is, you know, because reasonable minds may differ. No. Reasonable minds may not differ. Birthers may differ with reasonable minds, but reasonable minds may not differ on the president's status as someone born in the United States.
Yeah, it's...
And so all he's doing is fanning the flames and feeding the fire.
It seems like that's really what's happening with the media. You know, CNN, for God's sakes, I don't know if you were looking at the headlines now, CNN has decided to bring up the birtherism issue, too.
Oh, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
And the one person who absolutely torched her career over this was Meredith Vieira. By the way, Ron in Raleigh just wrote in, David. He said, I always lather twice, and then I rinse Priebus.
But the other thing is that I'm glad people aren't touching is the issue with the because I still believe it's a death trap like you wouldn't believe it if you touch it, was the issue with Trigg and Sarah Palin. You know, Shannon Moore said on her Twitter she wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
She won't talk about it on the radio.
No.
It's a dead issue. I mean, the fact that people, you have to really question about people who are pushing this to begin with. Like, what are you even thinking for a second? I mean, it's a disabled child, for God's sakes. And the point is this. And you know what, Bob? They're right. They are right. It is a double standard. You are correct. You are correct, sir. It is a double standard. But that doesn't change the fact that it's toxic to talk about it. You want to change a campaign in a hurry? You bring that story up, because we don't even have one-tenth of the infrastructure to defend that. You know that, Bob.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, so that was the other thing I wanted to mention. But anyways, get back to me on that History of Celtic Britain, Episode 3. I'd like to hear you.
I plan on watching it this evening.
Okay, good.
Because I think if I'm reading my timeline correctly,
right.
this portion should include Julius Caesar's foray into Britain.
You are correct once again. Yes, and there is a bit of what I think we can pen now as the Celtic Britain CSI moments of the program.
CSI Celtic Britain.
Yeah, I mean that's basically
CSI. No, that would be CSI Londinium.
Well, you know, the thing about watching this is you would think, like, you know, you can get this all over, you can get this over all at once if you just line up all the skulls and just say they were met with tragedy and great, great struggle.
There was great mayhem.
Yeah, I mean, but the way they do, I have to give BBC credit. They know how to kill time like you wouldn't believe with these goddamn skulls. And it's over and over again. No, I mean, when you just watch it, here's the thing about it, Bob. This is what I suggest.
Oh, they fought so hard their spleens burst.
You could play a drinking game, or you could do what I do. Every time there was a moment where I said, you know, there's something what is it? There's a dynamic here that could be, and I just go, and skull time! usually, all right, they show the scene with the close-up on the skull. He's in the museum, and he's looking right down at
it. Oh, I'd love to watch one of these with you. That would be fun.
Yeah. But
cue the skull.
I haven't seen it. I'm still suggesting it. For all of its shortcomings, I'm still suggesting History of Celtic Britain.
It can't be any sillier or less accurate than 90% of the Easter crap that ran on the History Channel this weekend.
Oh, my God. Thank God I didn't even witness any of that.
I did.
You know what? I think that...
You know, Agnes walks in and goes, you know, if you don't watch something else, I'm taking the clicker away, Bob. So I wound up watching a rerun of the Die Hard. Yeah, really, no kidding. On Easter Sunday, AMC ran Die Hard.
You know that's well. Before we go, you know what's funny about Bruce Willis? He had, I don't know if people know this, but I follow this kind of stuff.
He's a total right wing jackass, right?
No, I mean not like that. I don't know all of the specifics, but yeah, he's a little bit out there on that tip. And really, really sensitive where it concerns criticism toward his movies. But he had a forum, and he had, like, this big message board, like a lot of people. And all of a sudden, you know, all these people, they would ask. After a while, I guess he was just reading it constantly, and he left them real tirade of a message. They, that's it. No more forum. I'm deleting everything. And he did. So, you know, Bruce Willis, true to his form.
Yippee-ki-yay, right? Yeah.
He just couldn't take that kind of thing. But the other thing before I go, and I've been hearing about this, but I don't know, and Sandra might find this funny, but a lot of people on the radio on the show I was listening to tell me that the reality show of Steven Seagal being a law officer in New Orleans, it's not a joke. He's still there.
Yeah.
He's still there, and he just does write-ups of tickets. And a lot of people they try to come up to him and talk about his action films and he's not having it. He's just writing up tickets and
that's a former life citizen.
Yeah, but the one last thing before I go is season two of Tremé started for those people who haven't watched season one.
See, I'd love to watch that. There's a lot I've heard. Yeah.
I mean, it's just great with the music culture that they have in it, you know, a lot of the music guests and a lot of the commentary on it is really, really smart, and I'm glad HBO picked it up again. And for those people who haven't seen it, it's about it takes 5 years back after Katrina, about one year after Katrina, and it talks about the restructuring. And what they're dealing with in the communities, and it's like a cross section of different cultures and different characters. And yeah, that's a really interesting show. If you haven't caught it, you can probably watch season one online somewhere. So yeah, Tremé, History of Celtic Britain, the Israel Lobby, those should do you good.
Sounds cool. Thanks, David.
All right, later, Bob. We'll talk later.
Later. Bye now.
Bye.
Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, I looked up that author.
Yes?
I have this nifty little program called Byron. And, first, a disclaimer. I am an avowed romance reader. And proud of it too.
You're an avowed reader. You read. you read science fiction. You read romance. You read, right?
Yeah. Anyway, I looked her up. She's had one book and a couple short stories published. They were not romance. They are erotica. There is a big honking difference.
Yeah, erotica has money shots, right?
Well, I suppose you could put it that way. Romance can encompass anything from Georgette Heyer, which means at the very end of the book, after the proposal, there might be a chaste kiss, to Linda Howard, where you better have your significant other handy, because after the end of the book, you're going to jump his bones. Yeah, that's romance.
Ooh-wee.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, the term bodice ripper is out of date. Bodice rippers have long gone out of fashion.
It's just so handy, though.
Yeah, I know, but it's also, there's a term for that. It's called rape.
Not in the books that Agnes reads.
Well, not.
With sweaty Fabio on the top and the woman with the laces half undone of her bodice, you know, pirate queen, you know, that kind of stuff.
Going by the covers. The covers don't mean anything.
Yeah, but that's as far as I've ever gotten with one, Susan. I mean, it...
Seeing as how I supply Agnes with most of her romances, I don't know. No, you may end up with what looks like a sweaty bodice ripper on the front, but that's all it is. It's a picture on the front. And the author has absolutely nothing to do with that. She cannot control that.
Yeah, that just like newspaper articles or magazine. Yeah, the reporter doesn't write the headline.
Inside, there is, you know, it could, you know, like I've seen reprints of Georgette Heyer that had bodice ripper covers, which was really weird looking, because Georgette Heyer was, well. She wrote those books in the 1920s and 1930s, where at the most you had a chaste kiss.
Right.
At the very most.
But there's some more modern stuff out there with some real live honest to God sweatiness in them.
Oh yeah, just read any book by Linda Howard. But it's all consensual, and it's all obviously consensual.
And so you're saying that this woman wrote something.
Erotica is more concerned with the
passion, the moment of passion, shall we say?
Yeah. Romance is concerned more with the characters in the book and the plot. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, sure. That works. Yeah, erotica should be accompanied by a soundtrack involving a Stratocaster and a wah-wah pedal.
More or less. And you know, romance, you need mood candles and a string quartet off the background.
And me standing off to one side saying, Agnes, I think this is waiting for the bus in G-flat minor exacerbated Anabaptist. That's when I get the elbow in the ribs. Texas Betsy said, please tell Susan I'm also a big fan of Linda Howard.
Oh, yeah, Linda Howard rocks. I do know, as surprised...
Take your word for it.
You may not know it, but you have benefited by the talents of Linda Howard. So have innumerable men, including my husband. He was so grateful he started reading romance novels himself.
I always wanted to read one of the ones that Saddam Hussein wrote. You know, he was a prolific writer of romance novels.
Oh, I shudder to think what somebody out of that culture would come up with.
Yeah, but it's so repressed, you never know.
Yeah. Anyway, firing or going after a teacher because of something she does under pen name. I thought we had something called the Fourth Amendment.
Well, but we don't. We don't. That's been dead for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard Spike telling that story, Susan, and I got to thinking, my God, can you? Because I used to harbor this fantasy that maybe I could go back into the real earning working world,
mm-hmm.
and make it home in time to do the show every evening. And then I thought, wait a minute. They would fire me yesterday after one episode of this. And it's true.
Unless, of course, you got on a liberal station.
No. I'm not talking about... No, I'm talking about, you know, me going to work. I mean, no. If I ever go back into the working world, it will be as a telemarketer or a Walmart greeter. Okay? I mean, that's just where I am.
That's just obscene. That's just obscene. You going... Oh, God. And... By the way, I worked as a...
But if I tried to do this and that, no, I would be fired immediately.
Yeah, yeah. And that's just... Ew!
So, right.
You know, I think... I just... I weep for my country. It's no longer my country.
If you really want to get your weep on, swing on by truthdig.com and read the latest from Chris Hedges. Reverbo sent this along earlier today. Chris is getting rather dark and nihilistic, I think, and I don't think that's unjustifiable. A column titled Susan, "The Corporate State Wins Again." It was posted April 25th, yesterday. And it contains this paragraph. Just this paragraph. Human history, I mention this because, you know, you're a history buff. Human history, rather than a chronicle of freedom and democracy, is characterized by ruthless domination. Our elites have done what all elites do. They have found sophisticated mechanisms to thwart popular aspirations, disenfranchise the working, and increasingly the middle class, keep us passive and make us serve their interests. The brief democratic opening in our society in the early 20th century, made possible by radical movements, unions, and a vigorous press, has again been shut tight. We were met, and this is the money shot, I guess. We were mesmerized by political charades, cheap consumerism, and virtual hallucinations as we were ruthlessly stripped of power.
He's right.
Yeah, he is. With Joe Bajant gone, Chris Hedges, for me, is the next best thing.
It's the modern equivalent of the Roman bread and circuses.
No, I think it's even meaner than that. Because every now and then you got an emperor who didn't just provide the bread and the circuses to keep the proles in line. Every now and then you got an enlightened emperor who actually wanted to improve the lot of the proles.
Yeah, and how long before the Senate killed him?
No. This is after the Senate ceased to be a force to be reckoned with. There was throughout empire, okay, there was a steady move toward more education and not less, and not merely for the aristocratic families. And yet what I mean when I say that it's worse for us is that we're in retrograde motion now.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a place where we're seeking, where the power elite in this country is seeking less education. My God, the other nominee for belated Moran Monday nominee, Susan, was this four-square jackass in Michigan. What's his name? Michigan State Senator Bruce Caswell. Michigan State Senator Bruce Caswell has proposed that clothing vouchers in Michigan be allowed to be used only, and I repeat, only, for the purchase of secondhand clothing for foster children. Foster parents get $79 a year in Michigan, Susan, for their children, and this creepy right-wing Republican bastard says that that's probably too much and it should never be allowed to be used on paying retail. Bless her heart, our Cassie, our beloved Cassie, has written a post over at Cassie at College, cassieatcollege.com, called Secondhand Kids. And she writes briefly and just straight arrow to the point, onto the target, and just peels Senator Caswell like the rotten grape he is.
Are there no workhouses?
No. See what I mean? That was written in the mid-19th century Britain as the Industrial Revolution got underway. We're supposed to be past all that, but these bastards want to go backwards.
Yep. If I had children or even any chance of having children come into anything close to my orbit. In fact, I might just do it anyway, just in, on the off chance. I would be buying books. History books, mathematics books, things like that. Especially history. Old history books. History books that the right wing didn't get a chance to screw up. Because I have a feeling we are going to be reduced to underground schools.
I know what you mean by that, and that's not outside the realm of possibility, because ultimately all of these ploys that the right wing have out there aimed at public education have as their common goal the eradication of public education in this country.
Mm-hmm. They want people dumb, they want them docile, and they want them in their place.
There you go. There you go.
And if you teach your children, you know, on your own, subversively, shall we say, and at the same time, indoctrinate them in, you know, this is something you don't tell anyone about because bad things will happen. Hopefully you can teach them enough so that they can keep their individuality, because if you can teach them to think before the freaks get hold of them, they can think on their own. Even if they've got to do it behind a mask.
There you go. Susan, thank you very much. Have yourself a good evening. We will talk soon.
I have one other observation.
Yes, please.
Actually, it's a question.
Okay.
Can somebody explain to me why one of the most, one of the major passes in, the Eastern United States was named after Butcher Billy?
Help me out here.
Called the Cumberland Gap. Butcher Billy was the guy who went reaping through Scotland after the 45. He had a particular penchant for killing infants and women.
Was it really named for him, or somebody else with that last name?
No, it was named for him.
Well, he got a river, too.
And what I want to know is, since we threw George III out of the country, why was this named after him? Why didn't we change it?
Probably just never got around to it because nobody knew what it was named after it was originally named.
The man practiced genocide.
I'll have to look him up. I'm
no other term for what he did to the Scots.
I am plainly ignorant.
Rising. Yeah, well, there's no other term for what he did.
Well, you got to remember that a lot of Scots-Irish were settling in that region. Maybe it was just a not-so-gentle reminder not to be getting too frisky.
Well, you know Scots. Never forget.
Exactly. Exactly.
And never forgive and carry the feud on.
Interesting point. Interesting point. I'm going to look into it. You've piqued my curiosity. Have yourself a good night, Susan. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Just
absolutely. Bye-bye. Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. A little reminder in from Ron, since I mentioned Easter Sunday television viewing. Bob, I missed the Ten Commandments for the first time in probably 20 years. Yul Brynner as Ramses and Edward G. Robinson as Dathan. Man, that is some sugar-coated, sugar-cured ham. Technicolor is still the best way to watch epic films, too. I think it would be fun to take lines from The King and I, Yul Brynner, and intersperse them into the Cecil B. DeMille Yul Brynner. Like, Moses, 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 who is this Moses? I am thinking this Moses shall have been a fool. Mrs. Anna, take a letter to Abraham Lincoln. You know, that kind of crap. On we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, yeah, you know, I watched, I'm ashamed to admit it, but I watched Casablanca for the first time this weekend. That movie is fantastic.
You had never seen Casablanca?
No. And I had, like, downloaded it on the computer because it was on my list, you know what I mean? I had seen clips of it, but I just watched the whole thing because I was just, you know, trying to recover from Little Party, and that movie is great, and trust me, you know what? Humphrey Bogart, yeah, that's a man. No, she just fell away. I'm like, I know she did. She was running shit. I was like, damn, because, you know, she was sort of handling her business until she ran smack into him, and it was all over with. No, I really thought that movie was great, and that guy who played Sam, man, fantastic.
Oh,
what's up?
Well, the whole cast was magnificent.
Yeah, no.
I mean, does Sidney Greenstreet not just epitomize sleaze?
Well, good Lord. Yeah, no. It was, every role was just, anyway, I mean, I realized, but I just was I was more impressed than I thought I would be. You know how you hear about something, you think, yeah, whatever. But, yeah, and, you know, no wonder Humphrey Bogart was, I've seen a couple of his other movies, but, yeah, he's a big presence, he was. Good night.
Yeah, when you watch some of those greats from the silver screen of old, you realize that modern concepts of stardom really don't come close, do they?
No, because it was killing me when she started the lines and she said, "Well, you're gonna have to sing for both of us," and no hesitation on that front. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just thought that, you know, this is sort of like, damn. There's
Rink, you've got to help me, Rink.
Well, there was no demarcation between the sexes, you know, which was kind of refreshing to see, like, as far as just entertainment-wise, you know. Because she kind of supported her husband, did what she had to do to support him, but when she needed, you know, a backstop, where did she go?
Right. Oh, and the chat room says, Bob, give Sandra a shout-out from the chat room, so consider it done. Chat room says, "Hey."
Oh, okay. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, that was.
How was the DJ Sandra affair?
Oh no, that was great. You know, because it was sort of you know, it was a really mixed crowd. It was like the family, but we had like the clutch. I forgot how many kids are in the family now. It's just like, and they're all just getting bigger and bigger. So the party was just, you know, turned into me playing, you know, all the music from, I don't know, you know, first of all, why did I have it all? But, yeah, so that was quite fun, and all the kids, you know, gave me their list of what they wanted to hear, and it was Justin Bieber and
Katy Perry and...
Right, and, my, you know, Cyrus and
You didn't play the latest from Britney, did you?
No. They didn't seem to... No, they seemed to be stuck on a certain group. There was a sort of Latino teenager, I forget her name, that they like. I played some of that. But the thing that I noticed the most about that whole experience was, like, the girl, the my nieces are like mixed. They're black and Mexican. And the whole thing is they're brown. They don't understand the concept of black. It's like blessed. And they dance to Justin Bieber. I'm like, blessed. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just beautiful. Because...
You look at a situation like that, and you kind of realize that it is possible, in the midst of all of this grim madness, that there are aspects of our culture where some old evil stuff really is falling away.
Well, it could, yeah. I mean, if the environment can be, you know, then I'm sort of gripped by that aspect of it when I'm looking at all these babies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they can solve the problems, but they won't be able to if there's no world, you know? And it just sort of, you know, it just sort of bugs me that the adults are just so falling down on the job. But I don't know. I don't know. Anyways, at least it's the
well. Did you see the pesticide story over the weekend?
No, I didn't. Where was this? What part of the country is this in?
Oh, the whole country.
Oh.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah, it turns out that there are three new studies. Remember back during the Bush administration when the Bush administration EPA was going to pay poor black families to spray Raid on their kids and gave them a videotape recorder and a T-shirt for doing it?
And $200 or something? Yeah. No,
yeah.
I remember that. It's hideous, yeah.
Okay, well, there are three new studies out done separately, independently of each other. Comes from Mount Sinai School of Medicine, University of California, Berkeley School of Public Health, and Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. They were all published in Environmental Health Perspectives, and they examined levels of organopesticides in the blood of pregnant women. And they all looked at one or more metrics for IQ taken between the children's ages of 1 to 9 years old. And it's shocking and stunning and sickening, Sandra.
Okay, so they've tied it in with a decline in learning ability then, right?
Right. The Berkeley study examined Latino farm workers and their children. Researchers found a difference of 7 IQ points between children with the highest and lowest levels of organopesticides.
No, I did see that story. I wasn't making the connection, but I was really horrified by what the implications are. Yeah, no, that's outrageous. What was the other groups that they dealt with?
7-year neurodevelopment scores and prenatal exposure to a different agricultural pesticide was done. That was the Columbia study. It was done on inner city populations. The Mount Sinai study was done with a prenatal population in New York City.
So all these communities that are being poisoned disproportionately, the kids are suffering badly, right?
Right, but here's the thing that just gave me the chills. You know, we've had a lot of, and it's valid conversation in this country about how, you know, children's diets, and, you know, there's that initiative that Michelle Obama had. That even Mike Huckabee came out and praised, right? Okay, get this. The highest levels of organopesticides in these studies were as follows. Celery, peaches, strawberries, apples, blueberries, nectarines, bell peppers, spinach, cherries, kale and collard greens, potatoes, imported grapes. Now, those are things that are fairly widely accessible to a broad swath of the population, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the lowest levels of pesticides are things like avocado, pineapple, mangoes, asparagus, kiwi fruit, eggplant, which are things that are not broadly accessible across the spectrum of the population. Do you see where I'm going?
That's just... Okay, so you're saying that the sort of what you consider decent food, which is what those first ones you mentioned, all that is toxic?
Yeah. And it's not just toxic. It's, you know, because you can't, you can't really have this conversation without taking into account what we know about access to food, for instance, in inner cities.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, areas in Sacramento that didn't have a supermarket store for 30 years at a stretch, that sort
right.
of stuff.
Right, you know, but by God, some little bodega on the corner will have two or three peaches. They'll have a couple of stalks of celery. They'll have some apples. They won't have no sweet peas, nor asparagus, nor kiwi fruits.
Or eggplant, for that matter.
Right. So, you know, we're not. It's not just that it's getting into the bloodstream. It's more likely to get in. Or maybe my methodology and my thinking is just way, way off. But it seems like yet another case of, you know. And I can't read these things in a vacuum either, because this is organopesticides. But where do poor people live? Poor white, poor black. I don't care about skin color.
Yeah. No,
where
exactly.
do poor people live? They live next to the coal-fired power plant.
And every other sort of toxic emitting entity. You know.
We are poisoning. We are poisoning, and stupiding, because remember the thing that happens with coal-fired power is that that's where all the mercury comes from.
And that sort of will cause severe learning.
Right. Any woman of childbearing age in this country can have a hair sample taken, and she will have enough mercury stored up in her system to account for a 10-point IQ deficit in any child she bears. So you take that 10 points and you add to this 7 points, and you've got... Jesus, Sandra, you're talking about the difference between average and developmentally delayed at that those kind of numbers.
No, I mean, that's hideous. I mean, because we're already, at least, you know, in my family, already battling the female children, you know, getting puberty too early. You know what I'm saying? It's ridiculous.
Right, and that comes from all the damn phytoestrogens in the environment.
Right, and that's, you know, that's problematic, and it's just kind of, I don't even know how to even, and then, you know, we've decided to, after this batch is gone in the refrigerator, switching off the milk, because, I'm sorry, there's too many reports, and when they decide they're not going to test fish and all this sort of stuff in California... I'm just done with it. And I read that the milk, you may want to avoid it now with this whole fallout.
But it was... It was
about the kids, because they're the ones that are really susceptible to the various isotopes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the thing is, the milk was problematic before Fukushima.
Yeah.
Because of the use of, what is it, RGBH?
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean...
Or RBG, bovine growth hormone, recombinant bovine growth hormone.
Yeah, I know in California, though, you had more of an option, not just paying high prices. You could get milk that didn't have that pretty readily because of labeling, different labeling issues in California is a lot better than other places. But I think the milk across the board now is going to be out because it's too weird. This catastrophe is still ongoing, and they're trying to pretend that it's not, but I don't know how you're supposed to protect yourself. And I just worry about, you know, not so much me, but 20 years from now for these young ones. I mean, what are we looking at here, Bob?
I don't know, because
you got little ones. You got young people in your family.
Yeah, well, I'm all the way into the next generation down. I got grandbabies.
You got grandbabies. That's why I forget. Yes, yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's just kind of.
And the thing is, and this is one of those frustrating things about the human experience. It's almost impossible to check or test in real time to see what's happening. Everything is over the shoulder after the horse is already out of the barn. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and also, I mean, you know, and we're battling this sort of Randian individualist bullshit where. This has to be dealt with collectively. There is no other way. And the U.S. has to be first in line to take care of this because of their place, at least right now in the world. And I don't, you know, it just seems like we have a 10-year period to even, I hear that some of the stuff is already irreversible, like the hot seasons now are kind of permanent. And, you know, there's things that have happened.
Well, you know, here in West Virginia, and I'm sorry, it's my only point of reference, but here in West Virginia, we just finished the wettest April on record. I mean, everywhere you step here, it squishes.
And that's unusual, right?
Yeah, it's very unusual. I mean, we're finishing way out ahead of the old records. The Ohio River is down at Huntington, which is to the west of here by about 2 hours. The Ohio River is way the hell and gone out of its banks. You know, on the Mississippi River, the levee at Poplar Bluff, Missouri, went today. I had one of the, those sort of brief shaking horror fits earlier when I heard some meteorologist saying, and I think you'll know why, flooding along the Mississippi may be as bad as the 1927 floods.
Shut up.
Because it was the 1920, no, worse than. Because it was the 1927 floods where Herbert Hoover gathered up some folks and chained them together and drowned them trying to fix breached levees along the Mississippi.
Charming. Well, and it's really dry out west, you know, I mean, like, extremely dry. So, you know, it's just, you know, that it's just a bit of a worry as far as where the environment going. We got to get out of the clutches of these Republicans. I'm like, I mean, it really is like a nightmare watching this because they're clueless and they seem damn determined to just finish off. You know, maybe they want a big die-off. I really don't know what's going on, but it's really scary. And you mentioned the hedges. Yeah, he gone to some damn dark places.
And you know, how you can't just you can't fault him for it. I mean, I sat there and heard him in Institute West Virginia a couple of weeks ago, and it's just. I'm thrown for I'm at a loss to see where he's wrong.
Well, I know, but I mean, it's funny because was that Spike who called in first?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was making some great points about this whole, you know, if I may jump to this wedding thing. It's like, yeah, you know, they need to keep people looking at the activities of these rich fucks, but you know what? I don't really think people are all that interested in it. I heard someone say, "Where's Oliver Cromwell?" I mean, I thought that was an interesting comment. And someone also said, well, they reminded them of some secondary characters out of the Archie comics.
Ooh! Now, that's low. Didn't, you know, Kate Middleton doesn't even rate Betty or Veronica status?
I was dying. I thought, that's fantastic. So, yeah, that whole situation is really gruesome, and I don't really think it's so much. It's just, and to look at looking at the media is what's more interesting. It's like, my God, they're devoting so many resources to this, and you got to ask, well, why are they doing that? Because the interest is just not. I don't know. Maybe I'm not.
America doesn't care, but the most stunning statistic that I saw is that some 30% of people in the UK say they're not even going to watch. They don't care.
No, my friend said the only good thing about it is you get a damn day off, you know. She said she don't want to see those parasites. That was her words, all right? And that says everything to me. It's an English person calling them parasites. And I'm like, ooh, snap, okay? But did you hear that the firefighter union, they pulling all their money out for the National Democrats and shifting it all to the states?
No.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. And they said the reason why is because, well, they need some support. They don't see nothing on a national level helping them with this bullshit that's going on across the country. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. And the Democrats are hella dumb. Okay, they don't know what the hell they're doing. Because that's a big move. You know, they gave a lot of money to the various national PACs. So either the Democrats don't care and they just move over to the corporate more, or what? But I think it's a good move for the firefighters. They got to deal with what's right on the ground for them, which is Scott Walker and the like, you know?
Yeah, and the thing is, I think probably because they are so close to the ground and because the nature of their work is such that it has such a direct impact on the workaday folks. They know that they're not far from going from being firefighters in the traditional sense to, oh, I don't know, firefighters in the Ray Bradbury Fahrenheit 451 sense.
Yeah. Oh, God. Thanks for that. But, no, it's completely out of control. And another thing that was bugging me over the weekend was, like, the idea that Obama is saying that someone broke the law before they even tried. It's like Nixon much? Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
I'm like, hello? We mean he broke the law. Last I heard, he ain't been tried or nothing. I don't know. It just was weird. It was weird. It was like, why is he saying this?
I live in a constant state of well, I think I'm going to create a word here, flummoxation.
Yeah, no, because I was totally taken aback by that little video of Mr. Obama. It's like, dude.
And there's a new essay out, and it was featured on that Tom Ashbrook program today on NPR. There's a policy paper, I guess is what you'd call it, out from a pair of writers in the Pentagon who call themselves Mr. Y.
Yeah, that's all from the Kennan X from the 1947 foreign policy article about the Soviet Union. That's the real famous. Yeah, anyway, I'm sorry.
Well, no, so now there's Mr. Y.
Mm.
And they're going forward with some real live, genuine, no kidding, damn near radical thinking when you consider that it's coming out of the Pentagon. I didn't get to listen to the piece today, but I certainly read up what I could at the website. And these guys are talking about some strange stuff for the Pentagon, because
these are the Joint Chiefs. This is from the horse's mouth and
to God's ear, right?
Yeah, they're questioning everything. They're questioning the war on terror. They are talking about domestic priorities.
Yeah, and but some right wing freak is going to get wind of this and start demanding their heads.
Yeah, because
what they're saying is wild. Let me see if I can find the little piece here. It is time for America to refocus our national. This is again, I not for your benefit, but for the folks in the audience. This is coming from the very beating heart of the Pentagon. And you get the sense that this is people who are looking at, like, the collapse of the Soviet Union, perhaps, and seeing that we've got a little bit more than our fair share of similarities. It is time for America to refocus our national interests and principles through a long lens on the global environment of tomorrow. Ooh, the word environment. It's time to move beyond a strategy of containment to a strategy of sustainment. From an emphasis on power and control to an emphasis on strength and influence, from a defensive posture of exclusion to a proactive posture of engagement, we must recognize that security means more than defense, and sustaining security requires adaptation and evolution, the leverage of converging interests and interdependencies.
Yeah, that horizontal versus vertical whole argument about the place of the United States now, it is no longer vertical. All that language is all horizontal relationships and linkages that we have to make if we're going to survive as a world now. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I got to read that whole article. But you know what? The problem with it, how much is it getting out? It ain't.
Well, I mean, it came through WBUR today.
No,
so that gives you a pretty good idea.
Is it on the New York Times front page? You know,
not yet, no.
And what we're seeing on the New York Times, though, is those horrible Gitmo things, more WikiLeaks stuff, that is just revolting. But you know what's really more disturbing about that? How much has the corporate media used WikiLeaks, and why is this kid being tortured for it? You see what I'm saying? It's being utilized, but this kid is being made to pay for something that's supposed to be so horrific. If it's so horrific, why is every corporate media in the world cashing in on it?
Well, that, you know, for starters, they're gonna ride his back.
Well, no, but you know what I mean? It's just, I mean, just if you look at it for what it is, it's like, well, no, obviously, what WikiLeaks has released is not that bad. And dumb Obama trying to say that the Pentagon paper was less classified, it's like, dude, you need some advice. You know? The Pentagon papers were super classified.
Yeah, I mean, eyes only kind of, you know, kill after reading sort of, right.
Yeah, and Obama was trying to say that was the difference. And it's like, no, it's the other way around, fool.
And I guess what? Bradley Manning's brain is somewhere approaching Jell-O now?
Yeah, no. It's definitely a Padilla situation for him now. And we know it was an ominous announcement that we have to reassess him. Like I said before, he wasn't reassessed when he was first taken there. That's all you need to hear.
Game over. Yeah.
It's really quite frightening. But, anyway, the only other thing I wanted to mention was this interesting report about the Fed, how, you know, because we're getting a little more information about that organization, which is frightening, is that they literally gave just trillions to these banks, and the banks turned around and lent that money to the government at a higher interest. So it's like taxpayer arbitrage.
Jesus.
I mean, this is an incredible story. It's like, hello?
Yeah, it's another one of those. Some policymaker out there has been reading Catch 22 and thinking it was policy and not fiction. Because again, that's buying eggs in Malta for 5 cents a dozen and selling them in Pianosa for 4 cents a dozen, and everybody makes a profit.
I mean, but in the meanwhile, though, small businesses are being shuttered like there's no tomorrow in this country because they can't get access to credit or loans. I mean, you know. I don't know. The tightening of the credit markets for us out here in the real capitalist world is quite disturbing.
And that's, you know, that takes us back to that scary world of your nieces, my kids, and my grandkids.
Yeah.
Because everything is so fluid right now. It's like nothing that you teach. It's as though the stuff that we would ordinarily pass on to our children and grandchildren as the sort of, you know, transmitted wisdom may not even apply. Well, I mean, we may be teaching them how to fix a buggy wheel when they're gonna be left in a world where you wonder about the wheel.
Well, no. I mean, why did I have an image of Logan's Run or one of them other movies when I was just watching the kids frolic around and dance? Because I'm like...
Yeah, do not watch Soylent Green. Don't do it.
Will they be able to fly in a plane? You know, good chances that they may not be able to. You see what I'm saying? I mean, I think, you know, shit can drastically change.
And that's the thing. You know, the world we live in is the world that we assume, if you know what I'm saying. You know, we're so hung up in our present that we can't imagine a future, and the past seems irrelevant. But it's, you know, the world we're in right now, Sandra, it's only taken about 100 years to send the whole planet sideways.
Yeah, and the thing is, it looks like it's about to take another turn with this whole energy paradigm. I mean, those prices are just sort of creeping on up. And the other thing that I heard that was quite interesting is we're back to the capital crisis of no money, where people may not be able to finance cars. So it's not so much they can't buy gas, they won't be able to get a car. So they won't be able to participate in the motoring. As they put it, the motoring entitlement.
Yeah, what's the motto? Happy motoring.
Right, and so there's, you know, there could be big changes on the horizon in that regard. But I mean, I really don't know. You know, I'm not.
Yeah, and see, I don't want. I'm real sensitive to this, Sandra, because I don't want to I don't want to get all, you know, I don't want to tell anybody to go out there and
canned food,
seed banks and stuff and all that Glenn Becky crap and, you know, go convert to Mormonism so that you'll have a bowl of gruel when the end times come.
Well, no, but I have to say that I've been over at my mom's because she has a big plot in the back. We've been doing a bit of gardening. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, but see, I'd love to do that. I unfortunately can't.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it's, you know, and it's nothing really substantial. It's just.
Just remember, between harvest and canning, you just want to run a Geiger counter over them a couple of times.
Well, no, but all of it just seems just completely futile if I don't get my head right about, you know, what we're up against. But I don't know, you know, I don't even want to think like that because, yeah, I'm not a big fan of, you know, what is it, to buy gold and, you know, what are the food seeds? Is that what the other one is? And the sort of water stuff. I can't remember some of the other patriot type things you need to get. But
see, that's the problem. So we're going to raise our own food. All right. And we're going to have because it really is, you're talking about little situations where there are little enclaves of sustainable people. And well, that's scary enough as it is because.
But that sort of makes a little bit more sense, and also to be near. What was another thing I heard? Be near waterways. They're saying that's going to flare, you know, because they got to move shit because the trucking industry may come to an end. I mean, it's easy to go there because it's like the Walmart model can't sustain itself because 12,000 miles of travel can't be profitable if shit goes too high, fuel-wise, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I don't really know, Bob, you know, and of course this is all a bit speculative, but I don't know.
Well, I got to tell you, Reverbo was just tickled pink to hear that Casablanca to be enjoyable. He notes that the movie has been called by Roger Ebert and others the best American movie ever made.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm going to have to watch it again because it was great. But speaking of Reverbo, yeah, I have to tell him with the unemployment numbers, I mean, the whole thing about that is that, you know, our workforce is about 150 million. So if you divide the unemployed by that, you get the unemployment number.
Okay.
So if we have about 160 million people in the workforce, that's about half. So that's where the 45% comes from.
Wow. So, but still, that doesn't make it any less stunning.
Okay, no, I just want to say it wasn't, because I know it sounds really extreme, but if you look at it from that we have kids and old people and a lot of people who don't participate in the workforce from full stop.
Right.
So I was just talking about the numbers that are supposed to be working anyway.
Yeah, and, you know, his latest installment of looking for work in a cavalcade of crazy is done, you know, with a lot of tongue in cheek and a lot of good fun, but there's a lot of reality in there too. You know, I guess it's kind of a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. But there's a reality maybe that even as sympathetic as we are here on the horn, that we really can't get our heads around. That too is part of that dystopian future that seems to get a little bit closer every day, Sandra.
Well, and I think that because this country is so stratified, you don't have to venture too far to get a real good taste of it. And you know what I'm saying? Like I stumble through different parts of Sacramento that are like, oh snap, you know. So I don't, you know, and the suburbs like Victorville. You ever heard of that? That's a
Southern
California. Yeah. I mean, that's my idea of hell, a housing that has been completely foreclosed on, ghost cities, you know?
Yeah, and isn't there a prison around there somewhere, too? Or?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, you know, I mean, in California, there seems to be a prison, you know, within a rock throw, anywhere you are.
Jesus.
Yeah, but anyway, listen, I'll let you go. We might want to get another call in.
All right, I'll talk.
I'm upset about the Phoebe Snow. That you threw me with that bullshit.
Yeah, that just sucked.
Yeah, it sucked.
You know, somebody, because she walked away from a great career. and just said, I'm going to take care of my daughter.
Yeah, no. It's an incredible story. She's so young, 60. Hello?
Not even 60.
I was just like, what the? Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, okay.
All right, take care, Sandra.
Good evening. Bye.
Bye now. Calling from California, that's our buddy Sandra. Couple of emails rolled in the interim from Phase 5 down in Australia. That thing in England. Bob, take pity on those of us who live in a country that's still part of the British Commonwealth. We're being force-fed endless puff pieces about that thing in England. It's just automatically assumed we're all over the moon about two welfare dependents having a wedding at public expense as the government imposes austerity measures on the taxpayer. And with the exact same feed on all four channels on Friday, I expect the various video rental stores to do massive business. I shall spend the evening rereading Voltaire's Bastards by John Ralston Saul, either that or listening to the radio version of Yes, Minister. P.S. It's been raining here in Sydney for the last 5 days. Always does at Easter. And then it doesn't for the rest of the year, right? You know, far be it from me to suggest that anybody watch the for-profit media. But really, if you want an object lesson in right-wing vacuity, is that a word? Do yourself a favor. Yeah, about 7 o'clock Eastern or whatever. Tune in Morning Joe. Watch a couple of minutes of that. This morning it featured that little POS opining about how the right wing the right wing in Britain with its austerity was getting it right, and yet America couldn't figure out that it's got to tighten its belt. The guy is so far removed from reality that he doesn't understand that, no, that's not quite it. It's that we goddamned well refuse to tighten our belts as long as we're the only ones doing it. There was an interesting little incident over the weekend. Thanks for the email, Robert, Phase 5. There was an interesting little thing that I saw over the weekend about an exchange between a right pissed off audience member and a member of Congress. And it was one of those things that, if nothing else, is modestly satisfying just because you like to hear somebody saying things that desperately need to be said. And it came at, you know, one of these ubiquitous town hall meetings when Representative Chris Gibson made a remark that a member of the audience didn't take too kindly to. This is about 29 seconds long. As with so many of these things, you know, they're all shot with somebody's cell phone or somebody's handy cam or whatever. And the audio sucks. But we're going to try this anyway because backstory or the setup or whatever to the clip is that Representative Chris Gibson, a Republican from New York, had a town hall meeting last week among constituents. And he decided, you know, these right-wing crapulastic fraudsters have gotten so good at going straight to what they have come to believe are just the very same, you know, that they can just keep pushing the buttons and operating, you know, fear-based and hate-based. So he decides that he's going to have a run at the illegal immigrants, right? Well, it didn't work out quite as planned. Hold on. Okay. Here we go.
I think there's a rational way to go forward that we're going to be able to bring closure to. Mm-hmm. Because I'll tell you, there is one thing that you're saying that's absolutely true, is the fact that our taxes are higher right now because there are people in our country that are not paying their taxes because they're illegal. And that's got to be addressed.
They're like GE.
Yeah. Well, GE needs to pay their fair share too.
Oh, that's funny. No, that wasn't comfortable at all. Oh, there are people in this country, illegal people, who are not paying their taxes, and one of the people... Oh, you mean like GE? It's especially sickening when you realize that this suited cretin can stand in a room beating on people who can't defend themselves, claiming that illegal immigrants don't pay their taxes, when in fact they are some of the most brutally taxed people in the country. Undocumented immigrants pay $8.4 billion in sales taxes. They pay $1.6 billion in property taxes. They pay $1.2 billion in personal income taxes. And that was just last year. The average undocumented immigrant in this country pays about $80,000 more in taxes per capita than they use in government services, because they're not allowed to have the government services that they pay for. Jesus. And yes, as noted, 1,000 people have been evacuated after the failure of the levee in Poplar Bluff, Missouri. It failed in at least 4 places. The Black River will run into what is described as a populated but populated but still rural area of Butler County, Missouri. And I'm sure the right wing will, and I don't know how they'll do it without having their tiny little pin-like heads explode. But they will, at one and the same time, say that rains like this, well, these things just happen. It's no sign that there's anything going on with the climate or the globe. But we don't need to pay taxes. Well, certain people don't need to pay taxes. Because, after all, it's God's will. And when it rains this much, you know, levees are just going to fail. But it's bull. In 2008, the levee that failed today in Poplar Bluff, Missouri, well, it didn't just fail today. It failed 3 years ago, too. Because in 2008, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers inspected it and gave it an unacceptable rating then. Overall, the Civil Corps of Engineers has given a grade of the levee system in the United States a D minus. That is D as in Delta, D as in dog, D as in drown. D minus in 2009. Fixing America's long broken levee system would have cost in 2009 something on the order of $50 billion, roughly the equivalent of what, 10 years worth of oil subsidies? Roughly the equivalent of a year or a half a year of Iraq. $50 billion. But we leave communities like Poplar Bluffs, Missouri, to fend for themselves. Because it's not like the Army Corps of Engineers kept that unacceptable rating about the levees there to themselves. It wasn't a secret. But the community, left to fend for itself, by Republicans that members of that community put into office, the community couldn't afford the cost. It breaks your heart. But by the same token, it is damn near impossible to look at a story like that and not realize that this is the chickens coming home to roost. Literally. Because, and you know, they'll roost in the treetops. Up above the floodwaters. But Missouri has a penchant for electing God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Republicans. Because that's what the preacher tells them to do every Sunday. Because we gotta elect people with family values who won't let the homosexuals get married. Because that'll destroy traditional marriage in America. Well, guess what? A failed levy is destroying traditional homes in Poplar Bluffs, Missouri. And here's a hint. It's not because a couple of guys picked out a China pattern. But you just try to explain that to some teabagging horse's ass from Missouri with teabags hanging off their hat and their Gadsden flag and their poorly spelled signs. Talking about how they want their country back. Well, you got your country back. It's just a little bit damp now, ain't it, Wingnut? So that's the program for tonight. Thanks, everybody. I enjoyed it immensely. We'll be back tomorrow evening, prayer meeting Wednesday. I should let you know that here on the 26th of April, we find ourselves $1,000 away from our fundraising goal. That's not a good sign, but thanks to those of you, and you know who you are, who did help recently. We wouldn't be where we are now without you. Bills are being paid, just not all of them. We're about $1,000 away, and we've got 4 days to get there. That's 100 people at $10 apiece for the Thrifty 250. Sure do hope we can make it. It would be nice to have 4 months of making our goal. But this is a tall order, and I understand it. 100 people, $10 apiece. But thank you for what you do. And thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, from Lottie, our moderator in the chat room, to our bloggers, our blogger Texas Betsy, our news ninjas Gene and Susan. Thank you to Reverbo, our op-ed columnist at Cavalcade of Crazy, headonradionetwork.com. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. If you haven't yet, do go and hear last night's American History session with Dr. Bill O'Brien. You will be stunned, amazed. Thanks for the ongoing support of the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They never shrink from the struggle. And that struggle is one not just for Appalachia, but for us all. And always, 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 Judy, Gina, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next.